Now to the water crisis in Flint, Michigan. Yesterday, the federal emergency declaration regarding Flint's lead-tainted water ended, but officials rushed to say that residents will still get water bottles and filters. It just means the state will pick up the full cost. And last week, Virginia Tech researchers said there was now no detectable lead in half of the homes that were tested in July. But there is work to do. Pediatrician Mona Hanna-Attisha is with the Hurley Medical Center in Flint. Hi, Dr. Mona.
Hey, Robin. Great to be here.
Well, and just where are we on the crisis? We know there was almost panic on the part of some citizens who, when they saw this August 14th date, thought, that's it, we're not getting help anymore. They are still going to get help, but how much do they need it?
Yeah, they absolutely need it. We are still very much in an emergency. Our water in Flint, Michigan is still not safe to drink. And many people, you know, they haven't heard about Flint as much. They thought this was resolved. The federal emergency is over. People think that we have access to drinking water from our tap. And to this day, we do not.
Yeah, so people still need the filters and they need the
Absolutely.
Bottled water delivered. And your city's mayor, Karen Weaver, says that other things have gotten better. That's the distribution of the water in the filters
yep.
is more organized. More
yes.
school nurses. I didn't know that there was only one.
Yeah, it was amazing. So before this water crisis, Flint Community Schools had one school nurse. So because of kind of our advocacy efforts, we got 9 school nurses pretty quickly. I mean, we're also about to open up 2 to 3 school-based health centers. So there are some great things happening in Flint, especially for this coming year. We're going to have more slots for preschool. A new child care center is opening up. We have greater nutrition access, but we're very hesitant because a lot of these great things we have funding for maybe for 1 year or 2 years. We don't have that long-term commitment, and this is a long-term problem, and we need decades of resources.
Yeah. Well, where are we on that problem? As you explained to us and as the country came to know, not just in Flint, but in other cities, even a small amount of lead can
yeah.
profoundly damage young people. What are you seeing a couple years out for these children who had the lead in their water?
Yeah, so science has taught us so much about lead, and we now very much know that there is no safe level of lead in a child. The American Academy of Pediatrics reaffirmed this in a recent policy statement, and even those lowest levels that we thought were safe can have significant impacts on a child's cognition and behavior. So what we are seeing in Flint, you know, we will never, all of the research on lead is very much done at a population level in the field of epidemiology, so we can never really prove causation. So if I have a child that I see in clinic today who is newly diagnosed with, for example, a learning disability or ADHD, you know, everybody's blaming everything on the water, but it's really impossible to say, you know, that this was from the water. So we are treating everybody as if they were potentially exposed. Not everybody is going to have problems. We're hoping our children turn out even better than before because of these robust wraparound services we're trying to build in.
When you say you're treating them, what do you do for children that, I mean, it's pretty clear have had lead in their water. What do you do for them?
Yeah, so there is no magic pill. There is no antidote for lead. It's an irreversible neurotoxin. So the cure is never being exposed. So now we have a population that is entirely exposed. So we have to do something in the public health world called secondary prevention, where we try to mitigate the impact of this exposure. And that's very much what we are doing every day. So we are building robust early education systems, robust nutrition systems, robust healthcare systems to wrap these children around to really limit the extent of anything that we may see. Mm-hmm. So science has taught us lead is bad, but science has also taught us that children's brains have this window of plasticity that we can really mitigate a lot of these impacts with, say, universal preschool and early literacy programs and access to a medical doctor and great nutrition.
Well,
these are the kinds of things.
We'll talk about the nutrition for a second, because you told us last time you were starting fruit and vegetable programs and just this idea of even bringing more fresh fruit and vegetables to these kids.
Absolutely, Robin. So in Flint, we have very limited access to great nutrition, which was one of the reasons our kids were hit harder by this. Because if you have poor nutrition, an empty stomach, if you're deficient in certain nutrients like iron, calcium, vitamin C, you absorb lead more readily, which is why kids in many inner cities have higher rates of lead poisoning. So nutrition is so important right now while we have ongoing exposure. But it's also so important to have great nutrition to promote children's brains and to limit re-exposure, because eventually lead gets stored in your bones. And if you have poor nutrition in the future, it can come back out of your bones and cause that neurotoxicity all over again. So my clinic, which is on top of this really cool farmer's market in downtown Flint, it's the only clinic that we know of that's in a farmer's market. We give out nutrition prescriptions. So a kid comes in for a checkup or an ear infection, they get a $10 voucher to go downstairs and get fruits and veggies. So some great programs have come into place to improve children's access to great nutrition.
Although you say the one thing you do need long-term is more funding, more federal funding.
Absolutely.
So we'll keep an eye on that. Dr. Mona Hanna-Attisha, Director of the Pediatric Residency Program at the Hurley Medical Center in Flint, Michigan. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, Robin.